It is Wednesday, the 12th of June, and this is episode 168 of Digital Outbox. Yes, it's Wednesday, not Thursday. What's going on? I'm Chris, joined by Ian. Hello, Ian.
Good evening, Chris.
And why are we doing this on a Wednesday?
Because it's quite possibly the biggest tech week of the year.
Oh, God, it's a bit crammed. Our show notes run to about a billion pages, so we figured it was probably best not to do it in one go for our sanity and for everyone else's.
The best bit, at one point on Monday night, I had WWDC keynote on one screen.
Yeah. E3 on the other.
I had a laptop running E3.
Yeah.
And in the middle, I was trying to update the show notes with all the stuff that I wanted to talk about. And I was like, oh, there's too much going on.
It was a bit bonkers. So I actually, I was watching the E3 one and watching the Buzz Out Loud coverage of the Apple one. And so there was a lot going on and I couldn't keep up with either. There we go. So tonight we're going to concentrate on a little bit of news that's been around security this week. I say a little bit of news, it's pretty major news really. And then we're going to cover WWDC, and tomorrow we will try, or rather it won't be tomorrow in your feeds, it'll be a bit later in the week, but we'll cover up what else happened at E3. We've had a whole ton of unveiling of some security I guess there's security revelations, aren't there? We've had our GCHQ has been theoretical, but supposedly circumnavigating our laws to go and snoop on you via American snooping, basically. So they've been, I mean, the reason I sound vague on this is because there's been a lot of talk, but no one seems to really know what's been going on. But effectively, there's an American body which collects data, which our GCHQ has been officially going to get data from.
Yes. So this broke, I actually think it was on Thursday night, just after we'd finished the podcast. Guardian and Washington Post both kind of revealed at the same time that there was this program called Prism. And I don't mean program as in like one little app. It was like a big data gathering program, which was called Prism, run by the NSA, and seemingly, and this was a controversial bit, they had direct access to the servers of all the tech giants. So Google, Facebook, Yahoo, Apple, Microsoft, Skype, etc.
None of those big companies, certainly, they've all said no, they don't have backdoor access since. This is where all the confusion starts coming in and around, because they've said no one has access in, but there's no doubt that there has been some collecting of data for sure.
And what caused more confusion was the next day, almost every tech company put out a statement saying, you know, they don't have direct access. And a lot of the statements, very similar. But then a lot of the legal people all speak in a very similar language. But it made it look like, was this the official line from the government to the companies to tell everybody we don't have direct access? But it flew in the face of the presentation that was being leaked to. It was this horrible PowerPoint presentation.
Now, this is all coming from one chap. The source inside is from one chap, and this is a highly secret document he's supposed to have released.
Edward Snowden is the guy.
Mm-hmm. There's definitely some, you know, he's saying, I'm doing this for the good of everyone and to let everyone know that this is going on.
But there was some real, not controversial, there were some real wild claims getting made, like, we can monitor somebody typing in to somebody's browser. As they type, we can capture it. They were making those kind of claims, which all the tech companies have sworn they don't have access to.
But then botnets, we know they're pretty prevalent, and someone with a botnet could be doing that easily.
Yes, and I guess this is where it's starting to... Because once all the tech companies said they don't have direct access, the story kind of changed, and the Washington Post and the Guardian started editing and backtracking in some of the statements, and they started saying, well, there's other ways of getting access, not direct, but there's this kind of idea of a Dropbox, not as in the service Dropbox, but as in a, you know, they could take the data and deposit it on another server or in a secure location that the government can then access. And then Google, I don't know if others did, Google the next day said, no, we don't do that either. This, we don't do this.
Yeah, so there's a lot of think and double think, and people almost assume that this is going on, and therefore they're now trying to find the ways that they do it. I mean, this is where my knowledge, and I guess a lot of people's knowledge, is, comes down to not knowing, because I'm trying to think of the best way of saying this, but we don't have any clear idea of exactly what's going on. We've got this guy's PowerPoint presentation and the claims, but there's no specific, as far as I'm aware, there's no specific releases about what information they have been using. I know that they have been using some information, but it's not clear at this stage what that is.
No, and I mean, certainly all the tech companies have now said, look, the government makes loads of information claims every year.
And that's it. And they will fight respond with the correct legal backing. They will give information out under those circumstances.
Yep. And there's nothing to say that the government. So we've seen, Stuxnet was the one that was released in Iran. But it was everybody believes the American government was behind it that took down their or put back their nuclear program. Mm. So it's clear it's not just the Chinese authorities that are hacking around the world. There's nothing to stop. I wouldn't be surprised me if something came out that there's a horrible bot that has been written in America, released out there, is gathering a hold of information, and that's how they're getting a lot of the actual content that they've been going through.
No, yeah, and exactly. So I wouldn't be surprised. And it's interesting to know that America and China are in talks currently about this very botnet type attacks and these real injection sort of stuff where they've got inside loads of companies and stuff. It's so vague. It sounds horrible, but I know is it's on Radio 4, which means it is a news story. Uh-huh. and they've had lawyers on saying, well, if our government is using information in this way, then the chances are that it is illegal. But then there's been plenty of William Hayes come out and said, we probably are doing things like this. You just got to get used to it. And if you've got nothing to hide, then you've nothing to worry.
Which is fine.
That's the sucky line.
Yeah. But the controversial bit from a UK perspective. So I think Obama came out and says, look, we're not capturing this data on US citizens. We're capturing it on worldwide citizens who are communicating with individuals in the US. So yeah. We're not breaking constitution.
We don't care about you guys.
Exactly. So they've come out, and that to me was really woolly. He is really... Yeah.
Who's to say that we're not doing the same back for them, tit for tat?
Exactly, and this is a controversial bit because we covered it in last week's podcast about they're looking to bring in, after Woolwich and all that, they're wanting to bring back this idea of all the tech companies have to give, access to the UK government. And what's turned out now is that, I'm just trying to see, there's 197 intelligence reports are seemingly being gathered and passed to GCHQ through PRISM, and have not went through any UK legal courts like they usually should do, and that's the controversial bit.
This lawyer, this bit I was listening to, the lawyer sort of pretty much said, if there's any information there that is relating to someone, it doesn't really matter where it comes from, they should have the correct legal backing to be able to see that information.
Mm.
We'll see. I think this news story will become more clear, there's already reports of the news agencies are now getting told and being censored on certain aspects of this based on secret and protection of.
Oh no, I've never heard of this, a denotice media blackout. So the UK government issued that last Friday and warned them that they hadn't brought any official Secrets Act yet. But the UK government were concerned that in reporting this story, they may do. So they basically put out almost like a cease and desist and said, stop talking about this.
And that just makes it, from the general public's point of view, that just makes it even worse, doesn't it?
Yeah.
It just makes you even more cynical and it's horrible.
And I think the way the story's now turned now, so this guy, Edward Snowden, he's 29-year-old, he's given up a $200,000 job with Booz Allen, who were a defence contractor, and he was an analyst. I think he said he's worked in a number of different, government and defence type firms over the last, 8-10 years. And he's kind of moral high ground, and he's just said the amount of access that he had, he had all the kind of, assets of the US, spy network were at his fingertips. There's a whole load of information he could do. He's claiming he could have bugged anybody from his desktop
Right up to the president.
Almost, I mean, but then again,
there's plenty of people that say they've been abducted by aliens, and there's plenty others who, you know, say that.
Yeah, Channel 4 tonight at 9 o'clock or tomorrow night, there's a whole load of Brits talking about how they were abducted.
Yeah, and there's always nutty Americans, and they love their Area 51, all those kind of stories. So there's always people willing to say stuff, you know. So I'll be honest, we have to wait a bit.
I think there's a good chance they'll just disappear, and the story will be more about this guy, and they'll be probably hunting him right now.
To be honest, he's probably on a list now, and he said he's expecting that anyway. There we go. More
kind of bizarrely, he went to Hong Kong, even though Hong Kong have got an extradition treaty with America, but he's wanting Hong Kong, the public, to vote there and decide on his future. And it's like, eh?
Mm.
And when you start hearing comments like that, you think this guy's a bit unstable.
Yeah. So we got one more bit of security to get through. And it's basically the UK intelligence. We're making thousands of requests to Microsoft for data relating to, I think it's mostly Skype, isn't it?
Yep. UK made more requests, more Skype requests than America did. When you think of the population difference, that's incredible. So in 2012, UK made 1,268 requests and America made 1,154. And
this is requests for information such as, you know, the kind of stuff they want in their snooper bill. So who you've made calls to, the phone numbers, when and where.
Yep. And it also Microsoft reported, and this was actually out in March they released this data, but it's just kind of coming out now because of obviously there's this more focused eye on you know, what the tech companies are getting asked from by governments. But UK was in the top three in the world across looking at, you know, Outlook accounts, Hotmail accounts, etc. So there's
a good thing or a bad thing. I mean, at least this is going through the proper channels. It's making proper requests for information, and I expect with proper legal backing if they need it.
And maybe this is just the way of the future.
Yeah, and if you talk how many phone taps and stuff would they have been asking for, or at least phone records, it's going to be far more than that. So
yeah.
In some ways, it's quite a low number, but what it is a higher number in our country than in any other place.
Yes.
I say that, we're top three. Probably per capita. Probably is. Let's leave security for a bit. Let's go on to Google Waze. Sorry, but Waze is a social mapping. It's going to be called Google Waze. It's a social mapping company which Google have recently bought. Social mapping, what the heck is social mapping?
Well, allegedly, and I do know a couple of people that like Waze. I never really got into it. So Waze was it's obviously it does the whole, you know, it's a good map, and lots of people were using it for an alternative to when Google disappeared. Or sorry, see when Google and Android brought out the turn by turn navigation.
Mm.
Waze was a free alternative on iOS.
Right. Okay.
And also what it was doing was people could contribute and say, oh, there's an accident here, oh, there's a new speed camera here. Oh,
so whose data is it using for the map, or is it literally just crowdsourced the, you know, geographic location and here's an accident?
Oh, that's a good point. I don't know if they had their own, you know, whether it was their own maps or not. But I do know it was a lot more social, so we're encouraging people to actually report things, and it obviously measure traffic.
So it's adding layers and stuff basically on top of, and so Google thought it was a good fit and they will buy this company up rather than do the initial stuff themselves.
Facebook were rumored to buy them. So similarly, Facebook were in negotiations for 3-4 months, and similarly Apple put a bid in 6 months ago at like 500 million. Facebook took it higher and higher and higher, and they were rumored to be about to buy it for 1 billion, and Google stepped in.
And it's rumoured again, same something around the $1.1 billion mark, billion-dollar mark. Bonkers nut figures again.
And it's an Israeli-based tech company, and what Google are saying is we're going to be hands-off with them, which will
be a surprise. So they're going to let them get on with it. But obviously all the data layers will start making their way into Google. I guess it's a quick way of crowdsourcing information. If there's a, you know, a body of data there already from data. I mean, it depends how time critical it is. Because if you're going to say there's an accident here, there, and everywhere, then that's pretty time critical. Whereas if, you know, other things like, oh, there's a nice attraction here, whatever, then it might be a bit more long winded.
And if you think about it, Google already has a lot of map type information, whereas Facebook doesn't. And Apple's obviously trying to play catch up, so it's like,
well,
hands
Facebook
off.
Has a lot of check-in information. They've got a lot of venue information.
Yeah, that's true. But you know what I mean. You wouldn't associate Facebook as a mapping source right now if you're wanting to do turn-by-turn navigation. You wouldn't think, yeah, Facebook.
No, sure. No, yeah, absolutely. They don't have like street map type things, but they certainly have location. It's not just check-ins. They know where you are whenever you log in. They can track everyone. It's pretty damn frightening. If they could actually probably map the whole country just by people's Facebook logins. Ridiculous.
God, that would be scary.
Yeah, that would be an amazing map to see. But yeah.
And I bet you some hacker is doing that at Facebook right now and just saying,
scraping that info. Yeah.
Do you think we'll ever be allowed to publicise this?
No. What was that map that they had, that gridding data that, do you remember that? There was something got mapped out and we covered it a while back. I can't remember. When I say a while back, it's probably like 3 years ago now.
And just like you say that, Shaq handed me his phone this morning. And even though he slags me off about using this app, I can't remember its name. It's great when I do a segue and it's like TimeHop. So TimeHop's a little app that you give it your Twitter and Flickr credentials, and it basically says, on this day last year, you tweeted this. 3 years ago, you tweeted this. 6 years ago, you put this photo up. 4 years ago, yesterday, first episode of Digital Outbox.
Hey, 4 years. Super excited.
Exactly. I still get slagged off for that. My boss still says, super excited, Ian.
Excellent. The heady days. Right, let's get on. Well, we're already quarter of an hour in here, and let's go on to WWDC because that was big news. So basically, we started off with Tim Cook, as ever, coming on, giving some stats. And then weirdly, going on to show us some robotic cars.
Yeah, basically it was Zenkit Skeletrics for a new generation.
Maybe. So these were AI controlled, so they had little brains in, but they're all run by iOS, so the kind of the phone nearby was actually controlling these cars. I think he was trying to show innovative and creative uses for the platform outside of just making applications, right? But it when it worked, it was quite funky what they were doing.
When it failed, these cars were going round the track and then they were trying to minutes to get going.
Yeah, it was a little bit uncomfortable, wasn't it?
I felt sorry for them.
Yeah, so
this was like a brand new company. The app launched today, or app launched in WWDC. The company was kind of going public for the first time. And I mean, it was quite cool. It rolled out a track, basically, and the cars followed the track.
And then they were all kind of reacting to each other, and if they had little, you know, problems, then they could go around each other. And then they had the supercar, which was the one that broke, but actually that could then overtake the others. And then they showed how, you know, it's all kind of basic stuff, kind of very much, you know, classroom stuff. But I guess that's kind of where Apple are aiming. So, you know, it could be used for programming sort of stuff. Anyway, it was by the by. It was a bit random.
It didn't quite
work in the grand scheme of things. But what we forget is that this conference is for developers.
and these guys
are developers. We forget because we think it's for product announcements. But it's really, that's not what the conference should be about.
But what are the chances that next year's I.O. that Google will bring out their autonomous cars and say, we don't do toys, we do cars.
Here's San Francisco. That's our track.
Yeah.
Oh, it went wrong as well. Sorry about that. but anyway, so then they did go on and they rolled out a whole ton of stuff which they've been working on, because obviously they've been quiet for a while. And they did the first thing, in fact, before even the cars, they did open the whole show with a presentation video, which was pretty much saying, guys, stop your moaning. We're doing stuff. We're just not shouting about it, and just shut up because we like to take our time. And you know that they're just manipulating everyone to now tell everyone how amazing they are because they spend their time doing all these incredible things.
I tell you,
when they're ready.
I hope Johnny was playing with himself when that video was shown.
Because
he was definitely behind that.
It was a good video.
It's good. It was. But
nevertheless, you know that it's just pandering to all these people like us who get impatient, and he's just saying, look, piss off. We're doing things in our own sweet time and our own sweet way.
But to be fair to them, it was a pretty packed 2 hours after the first 20 minutes were out of the way.
You say that.
Oh, I'm
here to dig tonight, by the way. I'm devil's advocate for sure.
Hey, bring it.
So OS 10, they told us that they'd run out of cats, so they're going to call the next one. They're going to call their next generations after locations, basically. San Francisco, and their OS 10 Mavericks is the first release of this, which is coming in fall time. I say fall because it's an American conference. Coming in winter.
Winter is coming.
Yeah, it is. They have some quite nifty little features coming out. So do you want to run through them?
Well, the first bit really hacked me off because they said there's three features that I want to show you. First is Finder tabs. And I was like, good grief. if this is a level of innovation we're going to see, I am going to hit somebody.
We know that they're slow at releasing new things, but Find the Tabs was a good one. Come on, we needed it.
The next one was tagging, and I was like, yawn.
Yeah, it's boring, but again, as a facility and how they showed you working, it was pretty good, really.
And the third one, which is now like pretty important to me, since I do have this, was multiple displays, because now that I have a multiple display, I realise how bad the current operating system
like when you go to it doesn't work well with it. So when you go full screen, it clogs up the other screen as well. You can't have two full screens, and now they've gone to a system where you can full screen pretty much everything, and each screen can work independently of the others, and it, you know, it's pretty much as it should have been, but hasn't been to date.
Yes, and to be fair, Craig, I'm going to pronounce his name, Federighi, who was actually, I thought, quite a good presenter.
Yeah, he did good. He did a good job, yeah.
He was able to react to the audience, because the audience were whooping and hollering at that. And he was like, hey, you guys like your multiple displays.
Yeah.
And I think it was, but what annoyed me more was the reaction on Twitter was like, that's fantastic. It's like, no, this should have been there 10 years ago. That's a disgrace. It hacked me off when I plugged the monitor in, and I realised how bad it was. And I thought, good grief, that's really basic stuff. XP does a better job.
Yeah.
I said it all.
No, you're right. You're right. Anyway, but it's coming. So stop your moaning. Be fine.
Hold on. You're supposed to be the one digging, and I'm supposed to be.
Damn it. Battery life.
Yeah, and they showed quite a nice demo of a really heavy, CPU intensive.
It was a web page.
And how under Mountain Lion, if you put that in the background, it's still obviously hogging CPU, but they've got this way of, you know, it detects where, I think it's called app napping, so they can see whether it's not actually in use. And you saw that the CPU usage did drop quite a bit.
Well, a little graphic, which could have been CPU, so could have been any other little bit of graphics.
Pretty sure that they
could have been an animated GIF.
Yes, I'm pretty sure they didn't do that. And the good thing for me is there was a number of other technologies that they said this. They're really focusing on the underlying technology, so it's not big on new features. It's on underlying. So that means if you've got a current Mac, especially a laptop, you should see these benefits.
I mean, and it's clever stuff to know what's visible on screen and to shut things down if they're not. It's clever stuff. I mean, that's more like, I mean, that's probably iOS coming and showing itself on a desktop, because that kind of thing happens on mobile, these, you know, lightweight mobile devices all the time, because it has to. So being able to shut down an application and bring it back to life without even knowing that it's shut down is kind of what they do. So that's good to see.
There was some stuff around Safari, but I think that was fairly dull.
Yeah, I mean, it was all nice. I mean, Safari's obviously now got to live on its own because it's Chrome's moving away from it. But yeah, it's got a nice sidebar that you're now adding bookmarks and reading lists to.
But they can't
infinite scroll on sort of reading stuff and articles.
They can't rely on a new operating system every year to 18 months to update Safari. It will just fall further and further behind.
I don't think they can keep up with Chrome. I don't think they will be able to.
And I think that's going to be their big issue, because WebKit's going to start to stagnate if they don't watch out.
Because they're now in charge of that, basically.
Yeah, so they're going to miss out, and I think it'll be interesting. A year from now, it'll be interesting to see if, because they did put out their graphs that said they're still faster, but they didn't spend as much time as before. It was like there's basically two rankings that says we're a lot faster, and even had a real.
Well, it said they
Firefox.
Weren't that much faster on the official tests, which they've blotted on about before, but they did say in real world tests they're supposedly faster. So that's what, you know.
And then he went, "Wow, look how bad Firefox is," which I thought was that there's no need.
Cheap.
Need.
Especially as Firefox are going to go to a Chrome backend, and therefore we'll probably rock it next time.
Yeah.
Up yours. they chuffed on about how it's using less memory, and all the stuff they were actually talking about seemed to be focused around, you know, more efficient, less memory usage. iCloud Keychain, so a kind of password manager for your whole Mac, basically, will, you know, have your encrypted locally, your credit card numbers potentially, and all your passwords for your website.
And I would suggest passwords for you. It'll sync them across iOS and Mac. So
pretty much like Chrome does now, really.
Yeah, but if you're using 1Password, you know, so if you're a 1Password user, this is actually, and I guess a lot of people don't do that. So
no, they won't. And this is for a Mac user inbuilt for your mum using a computer.
Exactly.
Why wouldn't you? Why wouldn't you?
The only downside was iCloud. It was like, yeah, but will it sync?
Will it actually work? Notifications. So they've got some tweaks around that. You can, so if you get a, say, an email notification, you will be able to, or a tweet notification, you will be able to reply within the little notification banner that pops up. So the notifications on lock screen, that's on iOS 10, is it?
Well, it will be. It currently isn't. So what they're saying is that as you go to unlock, you'll have some notifications sitting there. App updates automatically in the background as well.
Yeah, which is kind of why didn't it do that already? I think people are worried about the privacy side of things, but since Android's been doing it, does it constantly in the background now, I think people realize that actually it's just much better to do it in the background.
Especially in iOS when you've got some of us have got hundreds of apps, and it just really helps to do that automatically. Yep. And I guess the one thing around notifications, which is, I guess, covering iOS as well, but actually syncing that, see, if you accept a notification, it disappears from everywhere. So you're having to like toggle, which we've seen Google do recently as well, because it was kind of blighted with the same issue that, across the different Android devices, you would have to,
I've got an email. Yeah.
Yeah. Thanks.
Now, look and feel kind of stuff, calendar, they've stripped it right back. They've got rid of the cow. They did quip about that as well, which seemed a bit strange to do. I don't know why. But they said no cows were harmed in the making of their latest calendar app.
I think there was definitely, a sense of frustration. If you go back to looking at when Tim Cook was interviewed at All Things D recently, I think he was frustrated at things like share price and Apple's perception. It seems to be getting a lot of dings. That they're slow, their design's old, it's for old folk, they're not on the cutting edge anymore, they fell off the wagon a bit. And I think that was maybe, I don't think you saw it from Craig Federighi as much, but I think there was just this undercurrent of, sod off. We're doing fine, and stop with the snark.
And that's exactly what the opening presentation was all about. It's just shut the hell up. Yep. We know what we're doing, guys. Let's just get on with it.
The one thing I like to know pre-presentation, see, compared to last year, because actually on the app on the iPhone that came out for WWDC, you could watch last year's videos. And the opening was Siri doing its mock funny thing and getting all these dings in about Android. And it felt really cheap watching it back. You were watching it going, God, this is cringeworthy. It was, and you had all the crowd laughing, and I guess because you're in...
They laughed at the same things that they talked about Android. They'll go on to Android fragmentation, but they will not leave that alone. Android fragmentation was until a big bit, and still the crowd were laughing. But that crowd are still the same people who will go to an Android meeting and they will laugh at the jokes about Apple.
I know.
The crowd that pissed me off more than anything else.
Probably right. It's just that sometimes it's just too much.
Yeah, it is too much.
Calendar.
Yeah, calendar. All nice and nice and smooth and clean, white look to it. Much, much nicer to look at.
And there's no linen anywhere. So linen's disappeared. If you look around, and there's a lot of linen on iOS and on Mac.
Linen was the only texture I didn't mind too much, actually. There we go. And your Facebook events can pop up right inside of your calendar if you would like them to. So and nice infinite scrolling, nice clean look to it, and it looked just much more palatable.
Yes.
Maps, basically, they've got a proper desktop app for it now. It's one of those kind of things where you kind of forget that it's not there, because you can get, use it on your phone all the time and your iPad, but you kind of forget that it wasn't on desktop.
And it's, I think it's funny, I thought of you when I saw the app, because it's, if you think of, yeah, exactly. If you just, no, it was more... It was more your point about everything's going web, but they're still holding on to, no, we're not going to put maps in a browser. We'll put it in an app.
Yeah, it does seem old, as in you would have thought they just want to go with a browser. But the way they've done it, it seemed nice. They've got all the flyovers. They've got all the map detail in there. Who cares?
But why can't I go to maps.apple.com and see the exact same?
I like the way you could send it to your iPhone. You can... type a direction in and off you send. I mean, the thing is, Android does all that just straight away out of the box. If you do a Google search on Google Maps on your PC or your Mac, already on your Android devices, it says navigate here. that's how integrated they are now with their maps and stuff.
So, but they win so much with their services. They almost get that kind of stuff for free. You know, it's like, yeah, if I go and search for something, the search is on my, you know, it's on the mobile device as well. It's on my Android device. It's just, it's so much that they're so powerful now.
Yeah. And so, yeah, it did feel funny that it was an app, but the app looked nice and it, you know, did its thing. And who cares, really? I mean, if you're going to go in a web browser for maps, you're going to go Google Maps.
Yeah.
Basically.
No, I agree.
But they're releasing the SDK for app developers, so you can, you know, Google and Apple Maps can be put into your applications, basically, I guess. iBooks, another one that didn't really, you know, hardly noticed that it really wasn't on your Mac already.
Oh no, I did.
Yeah.
But yeah, it always kind of frustrated me that I couldn't really read. And as interesting as that came out today, they say they've got 20% of the ebook market in America.
That is pretty amazing. Depends what they define as their ebooks market, really, doesn't it? Because if they say you downloading a PDF onto their iBooks shelf is part of that share, you know, not really. But they, so basically you can now get iBooks on your desktop, which is nice.
And there were some nice views in there of, like, if you've got notes, you know, by just having the extra room, the notes were all displayed at the side as it's scrolling through. So it actually made a lot more.
Oh, and they made some nice study notes. Kind of ideas as well, where it automatically makes study cards from your notes that, you know, were just clever little touches, but they're fanfare and swish more than devastating functionality.
You're not going to upgrade just to get, you know, notes on iBooks, I don't think.
Yeah. The Mavericks preview is already out for developers, and the rest of us get it this Christmassy time.
Fall. It's not Christmas.
Winter.
October.
November.
October.
Yeah?
Yeah. Let's do it.
Okay. So then we went on to have a look at some new Macs. I say new Macs, vaguely new. They updated MacBook Air pretty much like as they always do, with little tweaks, the biggest one being battery life. Whether that's coming from any hardware tweaks or whether it's actually this new kind of style processors, I can't remember the name of these processors, but we've seen some PCs coming out with these processors, and they do make quite a big difference to you know, a lifetime of your battery, basically.
Yeah. They're called Haswell. I'm just highlighting in the show notes where they are.
It's written in front of me, yeah. So there we go. So the Haswell processors are helping their battery life. So you basically, they've got some tweaks to the specs as well. So we've got
slightly bigger batteries. Yeah, okay. So somebody's in a tear down today, and the batteries are slightly bigger, but they are getting these battery life, which is like 11 inches getting you 9 hours, 13 inches getting you 12 hours.
Yeah, which is right into the heartland of where you need it to be. It's good. It's good stuff. That you can't. One of the things saying you can almost watch was. Am I right in saying that they say you'd almost watch the whole of the Lord of the Rings trilogy now without stopping? Which seems a bit silly, because why would you almost want to watch the whole of a trilogy? Why not? Want to watch it all anyway?
Why didn't they pick like the Batman trilogy so you could at least watch
actually could watch it all? Yeah, it's ridiculous. Never mind.
See next year.
Yeah, so that's what they're doing. They're aiming for it. Maybe that was their design spec. You have to be able to watch the whole of the trilogy, and they didn't quite make it. Anyway, so other than that, is they look exactly the same. Other than the battery life tweak, they really, really, really are. Like I said, big slightly battery.
So no Retina. A lot of people were thinking like, oh, the Airs will come out this year and we'll get Retina. But I think the extra power needed to drive Retina, I mean, I think people that have the actual MacBooks with Retina realise how needy they are to drive
and
it.
And how much use is that really for a laptop and desktop at the moment? Certainly, it might go that way, but at the moment, having a Retina display is not... It's a bit like having a high-def screen before all your high-def content was available. It was nice to have, but really pointless, because it kind of ended up making everything look a bit blurry and weird.
And I guess the surprise was there was no updates to the Retinas. So there's lots of conjecture that maybe there is a kind of slightly thinner design again coming out that will get it closer to an Air.
It's almost like they want to, I mean, they called the Air the future of, you know, laptops. And it's almost like they really are wanting to not have the MacBook Pro. And the only reason it's there is because there's a lot of demand for it at the moment.
Yeah. And I mean, they've always said the whole point of the Air was, you know, light and it gets you through a day in a battery. And it is getting there now. It is getting it to be that you can use that all day.
And, you know,
an iPad.
Yeah. So, we talk about MacBook Pro in a sec, but yeah, they obviously have been working hard on other products as well. And it, you know, clearly takes their attention. They've had new AirPorts I missed this bit. I don't know if I walked away to get a cup of tea or something.
It was very brief. It was like a bullet point almost. So there was new airport extremes because it's using the faster Wi-Fi. So the new MacBook Airs are coming with the 802.11 AC, which is I think it's a kind of doubling the speed, but you won't actually see that in practice because you never do with any of these kind of Wi-Fi, you know, speed charts. So these are tall. It's almost like they've taken the same design and extruded it by about 6 inches. So you've got this kind of tall device, and disappointedly, it's also got a fan in it. It's like I don't want a router with a fan. No, I just want it to sit silent. But I guess it's just the amount of data it could be potentially processing or pushing out. It might get a bit hot.
I don't suppose they'd put one in there if they didn't need to, say.
Exactly.
But yeah, Mac Pro, they do you know what? I got that. So they did sneak, like what they call sneak peeked it. They didn't show a piece of hardware, but they did give quite a good rundown of what they're aiming at. Now, and we heard a while back in the UK that we're not able to buy Mac Pros at the moment. I can't remember what it is.
No, because there was some EU regulation about power supply.
Yes, something along those lines.
Oh no, it was a fan. It was a safety issue because it's got the fan is so close to a certain grid that they would have to redesign it. So they've actually had to take it off the market for that.
So they pretty much, I mean, and it became clear at that point that they couldn't be asked to redesign it because pretty much they're in the middle of redesigning anyway. Yes. So we did get a sneak peek, but I got the whole feeling that they really, really wanted to release it at this show and show us in the flesh. But I think that they ran out of time. That's the impression I got from the whole show. I think this was going to be their jewel in the crown, and they couldn't do that in the end.
Maybe, because the... Because certainly in the auditorium outside, they had them all in a glass case.
So people could actually
you could go in and take your photo next to it.
Could have literally been empty or whatever.
They had the top off so you could see all the chips inside.
But it could have been anything. Okay, so it's an incredible looking bit of hardware again. It's like a... So the old MacBook Pro, Mac Pro was a massive desktop. I mean, it was ginormous. It had massive industrial like handles on top where people were to haul it away. And it was extremely good on extensibility. It had all the, you know, the card slots, full-size card slots for your full whack graphics and stuff like that. But they've gone a completely different route with it, and they've made a cylinder. They've made something that looks like an air conditioning unit, basically, but ultra, ultra small. Was it an eighth of the size of the old MacBook Pro?
It's an eighth of the size, and the scary thing is it has two graphic cards in it.
It's got not only dual graphics cards, but capable of outputting 4K, three 4K screens.
Yep, because I'd put in the show notes, could drive a Retina screen, ? And then up came the guy in the demo driving like three 4K screens. 4K Retina, yeah. And you're like, wow.
They've done some clever stuff, like the fan. There's one fan at the top of the screen, at the top of the tube, which draws air through the whole lot. So effectively, they're all heat sinking each other. So it's not like one fan is heat sinking one chip. They're all doing it together. Very clever. And as they said, you know, once you see it done, why haven't you done it? Why has it not been done before? Because, you know, it just makes a lot of sense.
And I think there was six Thunderbolt 2 ports on it. I think there was six FireWire ports on it.
So they've done extensibility this time via external extensibility rather than internal cards and slots, which I have gone out of fashion, to be honest. Because there are six Thunderbolt ports and all those can daisy chain off of each other, you can have 36. So I guess it's six daisy chain on each port. But Thunderbolt 2 as well. So the fastest, double the speed.
Basically, you could buy every Thunderbolt device and still have room because there's not that many.
Yeah. Amazing thing. And there's some nice... If you go to the Apple website, you can have a look at...
Oh, it's a lovely webpage.
Yeah, it's a really... Again, we'll see hundreds of others looking just like it next... I mean, get some nice animations and some nice way of navigating to show you what it's involved in it. And it is an impressive bit of kit, let's put it that way.
It is. And the more I watched it, Phil Schiller, as he introduced this and it all came up the screen, he was walking across the stage and he went, "Can't innovate no more, my ass."
Yeah.
And that got the biggest cheer of the night.
Chuckle, 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 chuckle.
He's kind of the guy in charge of marketing. So the more I watched it, the more I thought that was all planned.
Yeah, of course it was.
Well, some of the Craig Federighi stuff definitely he was ad-libbing with an audience. Guy,
yeah, that's true.
You know, there was like one, I can't remember what it was he was demoing, and one guy shouted out and he was like, "Hey, somebody really likes, you know, I don't know, whatever it was he was showing."
was something really, quite
bizarre.
Sad. Yeah, it was. Anyway,
he got a woohoo, and he was like, yeah, somebody likes, you know, I don't know.
It must have been candles or something. Yeah, it was something really random like that. So yeah, USB 3 on board as well, got all the FireWire stuff. A nice little thing where when you turn around the device, it knows that you've just turned it around, so it lights up all the ports, so you don't have to search for your if it's in a dark corner. But effectively, these things are all going to be sat on desks anyway, so you can see that this is a designer's wet dream, basically, isn't it? They're going to have these sat on their desk next to their nice big Apple monitors and feel really special.
And I'm pretty sure come the fall, when Mavericks is out, because the wallpaper for Mavericks is Retina.
Right.
So I'm sure we're going to see Retina iMac, Retina display sometime.
I cannot imagine the cost of that.
I cannot imagine the cost of this Mac Pro.
They could surprise us, but they're not going to, because the old ones came in at $3,000 minimum, pretty much. So this is going to be between $3,000 and $4,000, basically, isn't it? If not more.
I had a couple of people tweet me saying, would you buy one? I was like, I can't afford to buy one.
No, I wouldn't be able to afford one. It'd be nice to have one, though.
I wouldn't buy one anyway, because I just wouldn't use it.
You know what? The problem is with having an iMac is once you've got an iMac and you've got a screen and a desktop for that much money, you cannot see the point of buying Mac Pro and then by having to buy a monitor which costs as much as the iMac does.
Yes, I know.
I don't know whether iMacs will eventually become, you know, screens, you know, in their own right, if you want them to be, but they're not at the moment.
And the thing is, the screen that I've bought for you know, 400 and something quid looks fantastic.
Yeah, yeah.
If you can get by, you've got Asus staring at you rather than an Apple logo.
Some people can never get over that in. iCloud. Boring. So they basically heaved out a whole ton of stats about how amazing the iCloud service was, because it was chucking out 17 trillion push notifications, something stupid. And then they demoed our iWork in iCloud. So basically, it's in a browser. There's a kind of version of the iWork suite. So along the lines of your Google Docs and your Microsoft Office Online, now you can do iWork. And I have to say, it looked technically very impressive, more so than Google Docs, as in it looked more integrated, that you could drag graphics directly onto it and those would flow text around, and they had all the kind of stuff like that, and it was all nice and fonts. Very Apple-y. Works in IE, Chrome and Safari. Better in Safari.
Pretty much.
You weren't impressed at all. I was quite impressed with it. I mean, they did have to keep saying, guys, this is in a browzer. And then the developers kind of went, yeah, you said that already.
Yeah,
we're still not clapping you.
Because they basically wheeled out Pee Wee Herman. And he was sandwiched in between Mac Pro, which everybody thought was great, and Phil Schiller selling it well, and then iOS 7. Because everybody knew it was coming, and you were like, just get out of the way. We want to see iOS 7.
Yeah, fair enough, yes. Everyone was waiting for iOS 7. But it was, nevertheless, technically impressive, and it should have got more of a recognition probably than
right. I think anything with iCloud.
That's probably what turned off. If they'd said, look, this is iWorks in a browser, but rather than calling it iCloud's iWork. Anyway.
iWork for iCloud, because they talked about, we've got a new version of iWork for iCloud, and it was like, Jesus.
But
and then you fire up Keynote, and it's Keynote like 09. They still call it 09. It's like, this is a joke.
Yeah, so anyway, I mean, but if they offered that suite for free, I mean, are they going to be, why wouldn't they offer it for free if Google Docs is out there and 360 is out there? Anyway, maybe if
Is iCloud not free anyway?
But I don't know if you get this suite of applications for free.
I guess they never talked about it. It will be. I just think they'll
see. I don't see how it can't be. I guess it's one way of getting you to buy the suite in iOS or something. Anyway, so yes, we moved on from that because everyone got excited because iOS 7. Basically, they came along and said, yeah, this is like the biggest change since we released iOS.
Which when they said that, I thought, yeah. But then the video came on and it was like, geez, they have made big changes.
Yeah, see, now this is right. Okay, this is where I want to start digging you, because other than a slightly new look and feel, which looks very much like a cross between Android and a Microsoft phone.
Yep.
What else has changed?
Well, they've
given another settings screen.
No, they've changed how you actually navigate the device. So you've actually
have they, or have they just put some transparencies?
No. So So as I swipe to the swipe to sign on is different. I have some other navigational.
That's a huge difference. You could swipe differently.
No, but and I know you're just trying to wind me up.
I am. Yeah.
Yeah. But as you actually use it within each, you've got things like a kind of swipe to go back, which you never had before. You have got that, and I know it's just a copy of Android, but you have got that kind of easy way of switching off hardware, etc.
Yeah. But so as that, you, like I say, I've pointed that out as a big change.
But as you look at the, what's interesting is as you use the device, it does make a whole suite of applications feel really old and dated. And I do agree with you. A lot of what we're seeing is a reskin.
Yeah.
Rather than new functionality.
Yeah.
But I think there's a lot there that we'll build on over the next year, 2 years, 3 years.
I'm in no doubt at all that they needed to do this. They absolutely needed to do it. I think what they've done is clever. We'll come on and sort of talk through the bits and bobs in a sec about what they have actually done. But what I'd say is I think we've seen more innovation and stuff from previous updates that we've bemoaned because it's boring and nothing's changed, than we did with this one, which is basically making exactly the same thing look slightly different.
I can see the point, but I also read an article today that said, you know, from when Johnny Ive was basically told to be in charge, I've had 7 months to do this.
Yes, it's not that's fine. But you've said this is amazingly different, and it's not really.
It's amazingly different. I said when you watched the video, you were like, wow, that is big changes.
Okay, big changes.
Considering we've had 5 years of fairly small, subtle evolution, this is almost like a restart. It didn't quite go far enough for me.
I thought the changes that were made were typically Apple. They're really nice changes. So let's go through some of them.
I think some of the changes are really ugly.
Okay, so some of the layering is very clever from a conceptual point of view. The way that things don't completely take over a screen, they will overlay on top of what is underneath. And I think from a conceptual user point of view, that's very clever because it immediately makes it clear that you're in a stack of things that are laying one on top of the other. And, you know, let's take my mum again. You know, if a screen comes up and swipes over the top and you can still see what's underneath it, you know that that can be then got rid of again. So yes. You can swipe it away again, or you can close that and you can get back to where you were before. It's not suddenly a complete screen overlaid of another one and you don't know that you're in this like stack. So I think that's very clever.
Yes. The only thing I would say, and I guess I need to temper this with that I have got it installed. So it's running on my phone right now. I've had it for a couple of days, but it is the first beta. So it's quite crash-tastic. Right. Some things feel almost as if they've just managed to get it put together.
Just done in time, yeah.
And because that's why we never saw an iPad at all. We never saw an iPad run anything on iOS 7. We had one picture pop up saying it's going to run on the iPad as well, just not right now.
Yeah.
So at some point between now and release, I guess the beta will then start supporting iPad.
They've got this kind of weird parallax effect that so it reacts to your phone's gyro. So if you imagine that you've got a background image and your buttons are floating over the top of that background image, now when you gently tilt the screen, effectively they move independently, so you can almost peek behind the icon. So it gives your eyes the false effect of having layered thing. And I have to say, the demo that they gave as far as the on-screen video before, you know, showing some of these effects of iOS and what they actually showed in real life and what I've seen on your phone, the effect in real life is much, much more subtle than what they were showing off.
It is quite subtle, and in some ways it can be quite, as I said, I think the animation is just not quite there yet.
No.
Because the kind of notifications icon, which is like, you know, I've got 23 podcasts, or I've got 2 emails, or I've got, you know, 3 Flickr updates, that's on a separate layer to the icon, which is on a separate layer to the background. And the background can actually be one of 3 types now. So you can have a static picture, which you can, as you move around, it kind of shows you a bit more of as you rotate your phone and move your phone. You can have an animated background, which as you tilt it in a certain direction, the kind of balls will drop in that direction. And the third one you can do is you can actually put a panoramic image on, and as you move it moves around the whole panoramic image. So they really have gone to town, considering it's been, you know, we'll let you put a picture on and that's your lot. It's a big jump, and I do wonder, because everybody, they always used to argue, look at all these animated backgrounds in Android, that's why the battery life sucks. You do wonder about some
but then
of these.
Now, then
just
really,
remember that effect you talked about with this kind of blurring in the background.
Yeah.
It's displaying and doing a lot more computationally. It's doing quite a lot just for some UI.
Yeah. No,
so it'll be
yes,
interesting.
Yes, it will be. See how the battery does last. But it iOS has very much been, this is what iOS looks like. It's a black background with icons over the top of it. This is now much more personalized.
Oh, it's so bright. See, the first time you put it on, it's like, my eyes!
Again, you kind of forget that it hasn't been like that with iOS up until now. Because you see it and you think, well, having a background behind icons, things like Android, you're just used to seeing that.
Yeah.
And you're not... So you kind of get used to it very quickly, but it is quite a big step change for iOS. It did make some of those icons look a bit rubbishy.
Oh, the crap. Let's be honest.
Game Center is the most rubbish icon they've ever come up
that's,
with.
No, there is Safari. It's like stabbing my eyes every time I look at it. It's just the worst thing ever. There's a couple other newsstand in particular, just looks like something that I would do for digital outbox album art.
They've decided they want to pare back and go right back to simplicity, but some of the icons have suffered because of it. Because actually, some of them look great before. It's a shame.
But some of them are actually really nice looking. And also, you'll get the first fully animated one. The clock second hand constantly sweeps.
So it's not just telling you the correct time now, it's actually...
And of course, when I told Shaq that, it's like, oh, I'm going to move that to my home screen. Cock. But the thing is, things like icons between now and release can change.
Of course they can.
And I would be amazed if they didn't fix Safari, because that icon is atrocious. I just can't look at it and go, that's like the final icon. It can't be. It just can't be. Sorry.
Don't let it be. They gave some nice demos of things as well. So they showed us a weather app, which pretty much looked like Yahoo Weather. We've raved about Yahoo Weather before now. So it gives you nice little background animations of...
It looks exactly the same as Yahoo Weather, except Yahoo's now using the Flickr images.
Yes.
Whereas this had some really nice animations built in, but it looked like...
It's all fluff and guff.
Yeah.
Calendar, nice clean. So again, sort of reflecting almost the desktop version that we saw. So nice white clean, really nice way of swiping, kind of what it should always have been. Again, very Windows Phone and very Android sort of feel to it, actually. That paired backness and that kind of certainly the text reminds me of Windows Phone.
I think we're just seeing that's the in vogue design right now.
Yeah, I think it is. But it's unusual in some ways to see someone else leading with that and then Apple to not follow with it, but I guess they just follow and
respect
refine it, don't they? Yeah, respect it, I think.
You know, and I think that's what we're seeing with a lot of these things, that somebody's kind of stepped out and they've said, actually, that's making more sense for us.
You've seen that there's loads of websites out there that are using the same style, and it works from a user's point of view at the moment. It's really nice.
And I think the problem is a lot of the third-party apps that I'd moved to on iOS... I'm not saying they had the same look and feel as Android or Windows, but I think they kind of went there 2-3 years ago and Android's picking up in those ones. So it's all a kind of...
Yeah. It's
everybody
it's coming
everybody
to
else.
A melting pot, isn't it? Yeah. Absolutely.
Yeah.
They showed Game Center and how it looks a bit different. But basically, you know, we've talked about the whole fact that it's redesigned and there's new back swipe action that you can use and... This new config, you swipe up from the bottom to get to your settings. So no doubt that's been patented and no one else will now be able to swipe up from the bottom.
And when you swipe up, you can switch on airplane mode, switch off Wi-Fi, switch on Bluetooth.
Switch on a flashlight.
There's now a flashlight built in. So it was like, there's this idea that Apple have Sherlocked things. There's an app called Sherlock, which they one of their presentations years ago, not in iOS, but in Mac. Kind of replicated different functionalities, so they always talk about Sherlocking a third-party app. So it was like they've Sherlocked flashlights because they've got a built-in flashlight, and you can easily control brightness and volume and stop and play.
It's great. You don't have to. Basically, it's bringing front and center some of the settings which you would have had to dig into the settings to do. So it's great.
And a lot of people who jailbroke the phones, that was one of the first things they kind of turned on. And you can also turn on AirDrop and AirPlay because they're finally throwing in AirDrop, which makes perfect sense.
Big thing they talked about, but sort of almost went over it really, but multitasking. So they're now allowing any app to multitask, you know, in a pretty much the way that Android does. You get a list of cards up of previously or recently used applications and you can swipe them away if you really want to close them down. But they can all be doing things in the background, but it intelligently tries to stop them hogging, you know, processing and data and battery effectively. So they're trying to learn how you use your phone to have things ready for you when you want them to be ready.
Yeah. If you constantly use Facebook, then it keeps that kind of, it's kind of happy for that to be refreshing quite constantly. When you use your phone or you check your email, it'll refresh the content for you. And for an app like podcasts, which you might use twice a day, it'll refresh that. Yeah. Couple of times a day,
and it'll try and figure out what time you do actually use it to try. I mean, like, how again, how much this was spin and how much is actually going to be the case,
sounded,
is hard to know.
Sounds like somebody with a big bluff card was sitting there, but we'll just need to
just
wait
tell,
and see.
Tell them and they'll swallow it, yeah,
yeah.
But yeah, clever stuff. So Safari had its update as well. They went again, I kind of switched off at that bit, really.
Well, Safari's got an update and it makes it look like Chrome. I think that's all we need to say. And it's got iCloud keychain built in. Nothing much there.
Yeah, AirDrop, as you say. So now you don't, you can basically see people around you and you can pass files around just by going to AirDrop.
Which is great.
Yeah, fantastic.
They just had that a couple of years ago when they brought AirDrop out in the Mac.
Yep. Camera. The biggest thing about that was how they're going to now sort all your, well, they're basically giving a taxonomy to your photos based on time. So they'll have collections based on where you were and what you're doing.
Actually works really well. That's really impressed by that.
Kind of pinch out to see bigger and bigger amounts of time, so you can actually see your whole photos in it from a year in a nice,
and it was
grid
great
display.
It was great just seeing the camera roll and going out, and it's actually trying to say, because it said one of the moments was me around Camden in London a couple of weeks ago. So because it's got all the GPS information, it's actually tagging all that. And it was like, hey, that's actually quite nicely done.
As I said, that people spend a lot of time trying to, you know, classify their own photos, but it's saying iOS probably knows more about that photo than you do. So why not let us do it for you? So that's what they kind of did. Siri, they updated the voice. Whee!
Yeah.
And they've actually integrated it more into the actual operating system, which we always knew they were going to do. So you can actually do things like turn on, off Bluetooth, increase, decrease brightness. So basically get to settings via your voice. Again, sensible decision to make.
Yeah, but it's crap.
Yeah, okay. Integrated with Bing now, interestingly. So you can get Bing searches, Wikipedia, and also it integrates with Twitter. So you can actually tweet stuff. iOS in the car, so they're really, really pushing car integration. They want to go heavy on that. So we're getting pretty much big manufacturers to come along and say, yes, we'll fully support it. And so that's integrated into everything that your phone does, not just music, basically. So it'll do things like reading out your text messages, allow you to dictate a reply. So effectively, I guess that's the start of having a Siri API for people to input voice, you know.
Yeah, 12, I think it was 12 to 14 manufacturers, including Ferrari, but Eddie Q, who is presenting at this point, is on the Ferrari board. So there's no big surprise that Ferrari's kind of, you know, in with Apple on this one.
Yeah. App Store, done a refresh on that.
It was still, to be honest, still just as hard and bad to find things. Genius has disappeared.
You kind of,
because nobody used it.
Nobody used it. Because why would you? Because I've already got that. Like, why are you giving me another one? Yeah, I mean, App Store's still one of those things where, in fact, generally, you do need recommendations, don't you? And to go and find things or be looking at a constant review site based on application.
Yeah, absolutely.
Music, basically, they've given it a new look and feel again. But the iTunes radio was kind of the big thing. So, which is pretty much Pandora. But within iTunes.
Yes. And America only at the moment. When it comes out. So with iTunes Match, I think we were about 2-3 months behind. I think by the time they got all the licensing, I'm pretty sure this will be similar.
Yeah.
And it's going to be built into iOS 7 and also into iTunes and Apple TV.
It's kind of what we said all along, which is effectively they've got all this music in there. They've got it all on iCloud. Why not let us listen to it? And they're going to do it. Just like Pandora, you can create a radio station. So you, based on music genealogy, you can choose a band that you like and it'll play similar music to that. Ad supported unless you are an iTunes Match subscriber.
Which actually sounds pretty good. Certainly as an iTunes Match user who gets frustrated, it's like, well, that's actually quite a nice sweetener.
Well, I don't use iTunes Match anymore.
Oh, bless.
Like I say, coming out over here at some point, but we don't know yet when. We've talked about the syncing already, so pretty much, other than some new APIs, and they went into developer talk, didn't they? It's like, but, ooh, glazed over then. But yeah, new
the,
API.
The interesting one, game controllers. So this is the first time they're actually going to support at the SDK level game controllers, and they had a couple of kind of mock-ups, and similarly there's a couple of developers floating around WWDC with actual controllers to say this is how we expect it to work. We'll have more info when we actually launch later this year. And I think we'll obviously see some new iOS hardware. And it wouldn't surprise me if a couple of the demos were, here's some, not official, but third-party controllers made for iOS.
Yeah, that will be interesting. And maybe by seeing those cars at the opening of the show, it's kind of going more down that route of maybe there's going to be more hardware and focus to these things, that they're not just these devices there. They've got peripherals and other things that work with them.
And certainly, I mean, Apple are all about peripherals. I mean, we've had this made for iOS for the last 4 or 5 years. We had made for iPod before that as well. They know how to tie down hardware manufacturers. We sell lots of content. You license this from us and we'll put you in the Apple Store and we'll allow you to, you know, support our devices officially.
I mean, more and more, the Apple Store's got more and more high-end products in there that aren't Apple products, but they're kind of along the same philosophy, aren't they? And they're still considered the best in the field. So, yeah, I'm not surprised. But that was the end of WWDC. So... you know, more so than others recently, we got more visual feast out of it, that's for sure.
Yes, I think there was a lot. It delivered more than I expected.
If they'd had the MacBook Pro, Mac Pro. Come on, Chris, get it right. If they had that out as a piece of hardware running demos on it, I think that would have been an incredible show. I think that's probably what they're aiming for, and they've just missed that.
Probably. And I think maybe they've been burnt with the iMacs last year when they said, here's a new iMac, it's out now, because they like doing their, it's out now.
Yeah, you
but
can
it actually
it
took
you,
2-3 months.
So and you couldn't, yeah.
It was something that they actually apologised for and said, no, we made a mistake with that one. We should never have said
and,
that was
and
ready.
The one before that, they kind of said was ready and then had all the screen cracking problems as well. And then the heat problem they had on the previous screen. So they've got to get, they had to get it right. And they probably have to get this Mac Pro right. I got it right that time.
And it regards iOS, I do think it's an interesting time, because it's definitely a big change for them. And it also, as I said, it's really surprising how certain apps look out of place now. Like Tweetbot. Tweetbot, which
yes, very much out of alignment. Yeah.
I saw some people tweeting and saying, fire up Twitterific. And it fits right in. And do you know what it does? Because their redesign was very different. You know, so very, very little Chrome around the UI, etc. It feels like it's part of the operating system. Tweetbot feels like some...
Plunked on top
type.
Of. Yeah.
Yeah. So it's a... And I noticed Marco Arment had a post up just before we came on talking about, you know, this is a rare opportunity. This is almost like an App Store reset. Because if you try to launch a product right now, it's so mature. How do you fight it? But if you can be the first one in with a modern, fresh UI that matches everything in iOS 7, you might get some traction.
Yep. And people, again, people are farty and arty enough to want to all their apps to look like that.
Another thing I think will be interesting is how the old folk will cope. And I'm saying that quite deliberately, because I think a lot of the kind of mums and dads and grandparents and all that kind of stuff do use iOS more than Android. You know, they do have iPads. This is going to be a big change for them. You know, something that they've got, a new device, they've got used to, they know how to do it, and it's like, ooh, this is different.
Yeah, I agree.
And even in email works very differently. It's a whole very much like it's, mailbox.
Yeah, it's so, one of those things, again, where because they're taking away the Chrome and because they're also removing some of the simplicity in a way, they're adding more layers in there that... You almost have to know something's there to be able to use it. Like, if you didn't know that you can swipe up from the bottom to change those settings, if you were just using... I mean, that was one of the beauties of, say, the old iPad, is you could give it to a little kid and they would instinctively know how to get everywhere. Once you taught them the home button always took them back home, you know, they could investigate and move around. But there are going to be bits of the interface now that are not found until you know they're there. Like, you know... holding an email and swiping to the left or right to get the different options for it is not necessarily, although they would like to believe it would be, is not necessarily intuitive.
No, and the swipe currently is you swipe and you get a little delete button and you delete or you archive.
But
and
not necessarily many people know about that. And like necessarily know about the double click home button to see your running applications.
No, absolutely. But now it's a swipe in a different direction with nothing visually to tell you to do it. It's just because no Chrome. It's no. like... of nothing.
You either know it or you don't.
No, and remember you used to swipe to the right, and if you're on the homepage, it would take you to search?
Yes.
Doesn't exist.
Right, so it doesn't do that anymore, no.
So to search from anywhere, you do a downward swipe, not from the top. So anywhere on the screen, do a downward swipe, and you'll get a search bar at the top.
So it doesn't, again, unless you know it, it's hard to explain that to someone.
And I'm sure there'll be a whole load of, here's what your new device and here's how it works. And if you think when you do a new
they
iOS...
They never do that, though.
No, there's a little thing at the start where you say, welcome to your new device, and it goes through some things. It says, do you want to turn on location settings? And you go, but if you're an old guy, you go and read that.
Do you?
Or
do you read it once and then forget it said anyway? So that's it, really. I don't know what to say. How do I finish this podcast? Because I'm actually not at the bottom of my show notes. Let me scroll down. You can find out more about us. That's how I do it. www.digitaloutbox.com. You can email us, Skype, info@digitaloutbox.com, Twitter, Skype, Digital Outbox. I'm on Twitter as Cheesy UK. Where can we find you?
My blog is END.net. Twitter is Sweeper. And I've just read a funny tweet. Apple better not have a hard time building a white iPhone next time around because iOS 7 particularly requires one because it is that bright.
There you go. On that note, speak to you later. Bye-bye.
Ta-da. Can we spoil Game of Thrones now?
What, to everyone? No, because yeah. Bomb hasn't listened, haven't watched it yet.
Oh, get a grip, man.